Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and I'm just getting used to my new setup here in Nanjing, China. Hence why I haven't really been active the last month. It's been difficult getting set up here. It's been a lot to do, a lot of things to figure out. But it's equally important that we get this going again, because there is so much to talk about, so much of what's going on around the world. We're at a full year now of the Israeli genocide in Gaza and in Palestine more broadly, and that genocide has now entered Lebanon as well. And Israel has been relentlessly bombing and attacking Lebanon for weeks now, and especially the southern neighborhoods of Beirut. And there's been ground incursions, though so far those have been repelled by the Lebanese resistance. Iran has also retaliated. We see finally that it's a long way to retaliation against Israeli aggression for many Israeli violations of Iranian sovereignty, going back all the way to the Israeli bombing in April of the Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria, the assassination of multiple Iranian officials, of Ismail Haniyeh, the chairperson of Hamas, who was in Tehran when he was killed in July, and now the assassination of Sheikh Nasrallah, of the chairperson of Hezbollah, of the Lebanese resistance. So this has been a long time coming, this missile strike, which apparently did immense damage in Israel. And now the world is basically waiting to see what Israel does, whether the Zionist entity decides to retaliate and basically lead, or should I say continue to escalate and potentially spark an entire regional war by attacking Iran, Iranian nuclear facilities, oil facilities, what have you. And of course, Israel's trying to drag in the United States as well. It wants to escalate in any way possible, because it knows it's losing on the battlefield. It knows it's getting its forces are getting ground down, and it wants to do anything it can to get American forces, the American Air Force, the American Army, American Navy, everything involved in a war against Iran and against the broader resistance movement in West Asia. So that's what we have going on right now. But with regard to the assassination of Hezbollah's leader, Sheikh Nasrallah, and the current situation in Lebanon, the Electronic Intifada had a very good segment just this past week about this, a very good interview, and I would like to play that now for you all. And it really gives a really amazing snapshot about the resistance in Lebanon and its importance for the entire region and why it will not stop fighting. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
We're going to turn to Israel's assassination of Hassan Nasrallah last Friday and its escalating assault on Lebanon. On Sunday alone, Israeli airstrikes killed 105 people across the country, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. Over the last year, Israeli attacks have killed 1,700 people in Lebanon, half of them in the last 2 weeks. Israel's ability to wage the pager and walkie-talkie attacks that killed dozens and injured thousands in Lebanon 2 weeks ago, then to assassinate numerous senior Hezbollah figures in quick succession, and finally, Nasrallah himself, was seen as a triumph by Israel and the United States. President Joe Biden praised Nasrallah's assassination as a, quote, measure of justice, making no mention of the horrific toll of civilians killed in the Israeli attack. But for people in Lebanon, across the region, and around the world, Nasrallah's death is an immeasurable loss. They look to him as an historic anti-colonial resistance leader, an astute strategic thinker, a spiritual and moral guide, and as a person capable of instilling in them the belief that the liberation of Palestine from Zionism and the wider region from American imperialism is a reality that is within their grasp. Nasrallah led Hezbollah since 1992, assuming his role after Israel assassinated his predecessor, Abbas al-Musawi. Over three decades, Nasrallah built Hezbollah into a formidable political organization and military machine capable of deterring and even defeating Israel's powerful U.S.-backed military. The Israeli shock and awe campaign of recent weeks left people in Lebanon and across the region dazed and demoralized as Israel appeared to be gaining the upper hand after a year of military failure in Gaza. But as Israel signaled on Monday that it planned to send ground forces into Lebanon, Hezbollah has moved to restore confidence. In a televised address on Monday, Naim Qassem, the deputy secretary general of the Lebanese Resistance Organization, said that the Lebanese resistance group was prepared for a long fight with Israel, which it would win. Quote, "We will not waver from our true and honorable positions," Qassem said. "The Islamic resistance will continue to confront the Israeli enemy in support of Gaza and Palestine while defending Lebanon and its people." Speaking 3 days after Israel's assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, The group's legendary leader of three decades, Qassem, offered his condolences to the Lebanese people. "We lost a brother, a beloved comrade, a father, a commander," Qassem said. "We know that the battle may be long and the options are open before us." He asserted that Hezbollah is, quote, "ready if Israel decides to enter by land," and, quote, "confident that the Israeli enemy will not achieve its goals and we will emerge victorious from this battle." Joining us now to talk about more about the situation in Lebanon is Rokaya Shamseddine. Rokaya is a southern Lebanese researcher and reporter currently in Lebanon. She's also the co-host of the fantastic podcast Delete Your Account. Welcome, Rokaya.
Thank you both for having me today. I really appreciate it, and I genuinely feel honored being on.
That's an honor to have you. What's the situation where you are right now, and how are you doing?
I'm well, despite everything. Israel's still unloading as much as it can across the southern suburb, which I frequently visit. That is my second home after South Lebanon. But despite all of this, I genuinely feel that the tide is turning, and the killing of Sayed Hassan was a pivotal moment that the entity will soon regret.
And you talk about the tide turning, Rokaya. The news coming in right now is that throughout today, Wednesday, Israel has been taking heavy casualties in the two villages of Marun al-Ras and Al-Adaysa in southern Lebanon. Israel has already announced 8 of its soldiers killed and 39 injured. There may well be more. And so that will probably go a long way towards, reality check for Israel. But let's talk first about Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. He was by all accounts an iconic leader, but tell us why he meant so much to his supporters as well as to people across the region, and how have people been coming to terms with his killing, his martyrdom?
Well, I was surrounded by, I was in a cafe whenever it was revealed that he was assassinated. And at first, many people shouted, "It's impossible." They would not believe it. And then that soon led to wailing. I've never seen men cry as loud as I have. One thing that really burns into my memory is a man yelling out, "Bayimet," which means my father died. And he collapsed on the floor, and strangers were holding him up. And because of the attacks on South Lebanon, there are a lot of southern Lebanese now throughout Beirut, and many of them were openly weeping, holding one another. So this, it's a testament to how much Sayed Hassan's arrival meant to all of us. He was the first to liberate our villages. He helped liberate South Lebanon. And then, as you mentioned previously during the show, defeated Israel again in 2006. He was a father figure. He was a very noble leader. And his sacrifice is a testament that the struggles of the people of Gaza are no different from ours. This is a shared path with similar sacrifices. And the blood of everyone in Gaza is intermingled with ours now, today and throughout history.
Sayed Hassan, a few months ago during this war, his mother passed away, and he gave a speech. You know, he's given a lot of, his speeches are just legendary, and everyone tunes into them. The speech he made on the occasion of the passing of his mother, I don't know if you heard it, Rokaya, but it was one of the most personal speeches that I had ever heard him give, where he talked about his childhood, his very modest upbringing in a community that was very, multi-religious, multi-ethnic. This was before the Civil War. And he talked about how he thought about that as the model for the future Lebanon he wanted. Just say a bit more about his character and how people saw him. And I mean, I hate to even reference the disgusting, vile, grotesque stereotypes and dehumanizing images of him that are in Western media, but just talk about the difference between how he is seen in the region, particularly in his own country, and how he's seen in the West, with you, of course, having, like many of us, a sort of an existence in both of those spheres.
Absolutely. Sayyid Hassan was, his approach to politics were very, on one hand, very soft and delicate. He was known to be charismatic and funny. There are clips going around now in light of the attacks from Iran of him laughing. But at the same time, he was incredibly sharp and well-focused and organized. He wanted a Lebanon that was very pluralistic, where all of us could live together, because that is the Lebanon of really of today, despite everything that's happening. We've all banded together despite what Israel has unleashed upon us. And I want to reference something he said, because you talk about his speeches. One of the most monumental speeches for me was when he said, "You don't know who you're fighting today. You're fighting a people who have a faith that no one else has on the face of this earth." And Sayyid Hassan, he wasn't just a page in history. He was a path built on the unshakable principle of resistance that has helped keep not just South Lebanon free, but all of Lebanon free. Without resistance, it isn't just that South Lebanon would still be occupied. It is that we would be under the boot of the United States and America, from the South to the North and everywhere in between. And I think he is a model for someone who is principled and yet at the same time is able to rise up much stronger than ever. From, if you look at the Hizb back whenever they first began, it was a handful of people. And now they are the most formidable group of men who are fighting on behalf of our country. And Israel, in all its cowardice and barbarity, didn't deserve a noble adversary like Sayyid Hassan.
Rokeya, this happens over and over again, right? Israel and Washington clearly hope that by assassinating the head of a resistance movement, they can collapse that movement and
right,
remove the most, you know, formidable obstacle to Israel's subjugation of the region, as they, you know, clearly hoped assassinating Nasrallah would do. What has been Hezbollah's response to his death? Do its supporters still have confidence in the organization after a series of really devastating blows?
So the goal of assassinating Sayyid Hassan wasn't just to further inflict psychological terror on all of us throughout Lebanon, but to decouple the Northern Front from Gaza and bring to fruition what, you know, Netanyahu's promise to return the settlers to the north. But since the killing of Sayyid Hassan and Fuad Shukr and Wissam al-Tawil and Mohammad Hassan Srour and all the other commanders assassinated by Israel and the U.S., the Northern Front has remained active. And the resistance operations are continuing, even at this very moment, to reach deeper and deeper into the entity. I mean, today, the Hizb announced that it confronted an Israeli enemy infantry force that attempted to infiltrate the village of Al-Adaysa at dawn. And the village, by the way, is near the blue line. But they engaged with them, inflicted casualties, and forced them to retreat. And as of recording, there have been at least a dozen, likely more, Israeli soldiers who have been killed by Hezbollah. And that's before they've even stepped foot into South Lebanon. So these losses will continue to climb because the equation hasn't changed. Because this was the rule from Sayyid. He said from the first day that the Hizb engaged with Israel in support of Gaza, that the Lebanese front will not stop until the war on Gaza ends. And that is where it stands today. The Hizb isn't built in a way where if you kill the Secretary General, then everything else collapses. And they've actually been planning for something like this, for a devastating attack that would result in the killing of all of their commanders and their leaders. And we're watching now that no one has been shaken. Yes, we are mourning the passing. I genuinely still cannot believe that he was assassinated. It is a difficult pill to swallow. But if you read the letter that members of Hezbollah wrote in honor of Sayyid Hassan, they say, "We reject humiliation and we will continue to fight." And the first engagements with Israeli forces on near the border, they dedicated it to Sayyid Hassan. Labbaik Nasrallah, we are at your service, Nasrallah. And we would say usually, like, we're doing this in service of you. Now they say, we're doing this in service of your soul. So they are very committed and nothing has changed.
Let's talk about the situation in the Bahia, Beirut southern suburb. That is, of course, where Israel carried out the massive bombardment that killed Nasrallah and flattened multiple high-rise buildings. And it is continuing to carry out attacks there every day and ordered residents of the area to leave their homes, just as Israel has done in vast areas in most of Gaza. What is the situation there now? You say that it's your second home in terms of you're going there frequently. I remember visiting the Dahiyeh quite a few years ago. What have you been seeing there now?
Well, now there are over 1 million Lebanese displaced by Israel attacks on the south and the Dahiyeh and other areas of Lebanon. But Israel is killing now on average 100 Lebanese a day. There's nearly 1,800 martyrs so far. They're, like you said, they're bringing down entire residential buildings on top of people in the Dahiyeh, and those being made to flee are sleeping in the streets with nothing more than what little provisions they could carry with them. The Dahiyeh is a poor area. I say Haifa'ira basfihayat, like it's a poor neighborhood, but there's life. Very humble, very respectable, very resilient people. And when I go and speak to them, it's comforting to hear how strong they are despite what's going on. Israel has been following the Gaza formula by trying to say, you know, we're giving you warning before you have to leave everything, and then we're going to bomb your entire neighborhood, bombing near a Zahra hospital the other day, bombing near pharmacies, kindergartens in the Dahiyeh. This is a very densely populated area. So whenever they're doing their so-called precision strikes, they are aiming to maim, kill, and debilitate the entire surrounding areas in the suburb. And I've seen it with my own eyes after they hit Harat Tahrik. So it's very horrifying. But despite this, speaking to my people every day has only made me realize how resilient the people of the Dahiyeh truly are and the people of the South. There was an interview with one woman who was displaced from her village who said that while her displacement is weighing heavy on her and while she's sleeping on the streets now, she's seen what's happening to the people of Gaza who are dying hungry, she said. And she's willing to continue on this path and to even die on this path, so long as they stop the genocide in Gaza. And as a Southern Lebanese woman, it pains me to see my people leaving their villages, huddled together in their cars or laying on the roads. But I cannot tell you how proud I am that we answered the call when the world stood silent. And my mother once said something to me that this is a bitter drink that we're being forced to consume, but we will drink it together.
Says so much. You mentioned that there have been about 1 million people displaced from their homes. That's about a fifth of the country's population. Tens of thousands are entering Syria. Some of them were refugees from the Syrian civil war who are now going back to Syria because they're being displaced from Lebanon. How are people coping with such an enormous humanitarian challenge?
They're sharing this bitterness and the misery with each other. They're opening their homes. A cafe that I frequent, the owner couldn't stand seeing all of these families sleeping right in front of his cafe. And he told them, come every day, you'll eat here on my dime, and every night you'll sleep here. And I don't want to hear anything other than you'll accept it. People are helping one another. Our hospitals have been hit tremendously by what Israel did before even beginning the killings in the south. During the attacks, the communications device attacks, now you have to wait if you're looking for non-emergency services, but everyone is doing their part. We're all banding together, because the only way out of this is by standing strong and firm, because we're now in the eye of the storm, in my opinion. And the only way that we will survive is by holding even tighter to the rope of resistance for one another. And I will tell you that they're fighting, Israel is fighting against the people that fear humiliation more than death. And you can't defeat people like this. They killed Sayyid Hassan, and they ended up inflaming the hearts of countless more who've taken up the struggle that he spent, you know, 30 decades or 3 decades pursuing. So this isn't the end by any means. The occupation is going to end, and it will end in our arena and on our terms.
Ruqayya, I want to talk about the South, which is where you're from. But before I do that, I want to tell you just a little story about my own. I've been to the South a couple of times, but the first time I went was, I think it was in June of 2000. And this was just weeks after the liberation of the South from more than 2 decades of brutal Israeli occupation. And I visited the South with friends from the South, and I remember just, it was stunning. I remember we went up to Israeli military outposts that were on high on top of hills that looked out over the beautiful, rugged, mountainous landscape of the South, and you could tell they had just fled. I remember seeing like cans of food that were still there, clothes that were still there. They looked like they had just upped and ran away. We went to Khiam Prison, the torture camp that was originally built by French colonialists, and we were given tours of the cells by former prisoners who told us of the horrors that they had experienced there at the hands of Israel and the South Lebanon Army collaborators, the Lebanese version of the Palestinian Authority, if you like. And I remember seeing the torture chamber with the electrical wires attached to car batteries and attached to wall outlets that Israel used. What I remember most was the joy of people in the South, people streaming home from Beirut, who had been displaced for many years, welcoming us. It was just a celebration. And this was already about 3 or 4 weeks after the liberation. And there was a feeling that it had just happened yesterday. So for me personally, that experience was what made me believe liberation is possible. Because the context at the time, the political context in Palestine was of the Oslo Accords and this endless process and the Palestinian Authority becoming, the proxy for Israel. And then you had South Lebanon, which was just pure liberation and the joy and ecstasy of liberation. And that made me believe we'll see it, not just in Lebanon, but in Palestine too. I wanted to share that, but
no, I'm glad you shared that. I'm so glad you got to visit our southern villages, because the fragrance of life in the South is very different than anywhere else. And yes, I might be biased, but I feel like I can breathe whenever I'm back in South Lebanon. It's where the one village, Mita, they say it's where heaven meets earth. Our village of Arab Salim is very close to the mountain. We have 2 villages that are our family villages. The other one's very close to the border. When you are there, it is as if you are alone with whatever creator you worship or whatever you have inside your soul. It is beyond anything imaginable. I have been taught the meaning of life because of my upbringing as a Southern Lebanese person. Like it's dignity. It's something I've said before, is that in the South, dignity is our currency, which is something our occupier will never understand.
And, you know, I remember another thing. Some people who are a little older, it's hard for me to believe how many years ago it was, because to me it seems like yesterday. But the great Edward Said had gone to the South right after the liberation. Many people had gone to visit. And the Israelis had fled along with their collaborator army. I mean, it was literally, nobody expected that Israel would just flee the way it did. It was incredible. Right. So there was no border fence, there was no fortifications, there was just this little wire fence, and in some places there was no fence, and the Israeli houses were literally right up to the border, because they had controlled the whole South for decades. So for them, it was all quote unquote Israeli territory. And I remember this one point we reached where there was a ridge, and the ridge was on the Israeli side of the line, and there were actually Israeli tanks up on the ridge. And then below the ridge on the Lebanese side, there was one Hezbollah soldier, just one. Mm-hmm. And it was just like he was standing there in the open. And the reason he was there and they were stationed along the fence was to protect the people coming, to make sure they wouldn't get too close to the Israelis, right, and then you know, be harmed. But what was so striking was that those Israeli tanks were right there, the Israeli soldiers were right there, and none of them would have dared to touch or to fire at this soldier from Hezbollah. And again, to me, that's something I'll never forget, because it underscored the strength of the resistance in the south. Talk about what you think is happening there now. We've seen the battles already today. How are people in the South going to, they're going through this again after all the decades of occupation they faced. Are they going to be able to do it?
Yes, they absolutely will. And I'm saying this with full confidence because of our history. There are people who have chosen to stay, members of my family. Some have left because they have children. Others, whenever Israel was bombing Arab Slonim, they also bombed it today. They killed a family of three. But whenever they were bombing a week ago, some of my relatives all went to one relative's house and stayed together because they would rather die all together than be separated. Some are choosing to stay, knowing that this might happen because it's more dignified to die on your land this way, and they refuse to leave. Other people have left. And then, just so people understand what we've been through, there are people in the South who have rebuilt their homes multiple times. And when you go and speak to them, I've interviewed countless Southern Lebanese people. They said, yeah, my house might go, but it's worth it. Are we any better than Gaza? And not just that, this is for the sake of our liberation and our freedom. And I will rebuild, and I'm going to rebuild even better. Our people are truly just steadfast in a way that cannot ever be quantified. So we're witnessing this firsthand by the men of Hezbollah who are fighting the IDF, one of the most well-armed military groups in the world, and they're defeating them before they even come inside the South Lebanon. Because as I said, this is our arena now. They've entered our territory. They cannot defeat a people like this who do not fear death and who fear humiliation more than anything else on this earth. So yes, we will be victorious. And we're going to see a liberation day for Palestine, just as we did for South Lebanon.
One other question, that I have, Ruqayya, is, you know, there is, of course, all this support for Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and that's been visible after his martyrdom, not just in Lebanon, but there have been massive demonstrations in Pakistan, in Kashmir, in Iraq. There have even been demonstrations in Jordan and in other countries where he's seen as this anti-colonial figure. But there's also this narrative that I have to put to you, that Hezbollah and Nasrallah played, you know, that they intervened in Syria, and that how can they claim to be defending dignity and liberation when they took sides with the Assad regime in Syria in a war against the Syrian people? This is something I've seen bubbling up in the last few days, and I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
This is something that's been said for a very long time, and there have been people who supported the proxy war in Syria who are celebrating the assassination of Sayyid Hassan, and even taking Arabs have been doing this and, you know, flaunting every Hizb casualty and mocking the deaths of Hizb soldiers. But were it not for for Hezbollah intervening in Syria, we would not be able to say that Gaza would survive as long or Hezbollah would be able to survive as long, because the axis of resistance is a collective that works together. And I mean, at the end of the day, I'm actually more confident that people are realizing what the Syria war was, and that it was a proxy war waged on behalf of U.S. interests in our region that did not succeed. And it did not succeed because of, namely, the Lebanese resistance.
An interesting point. I wrote about this in a piece on the Electronic Intifada, but there was a really interesting interview that Rania Khalik, who we've had on this program several times, did with the veteran journalist Elijah Magnier about how Israel actually managed to carry out the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah and or at least of the other senior commanders. And some of the reporting that's come out is that it had to do with their involvement in Syria, because by being in Syria, they were exposed to all the intelligence services and spooks, the Western spooks, including Israel, who were involved in the dirty war, you could call it, in Syria. But the way it was put in some of that reporting, and I think also Alistair Crook, the former British diplomat, talked about this on the Judge Napolitano show, is that for Hezbollah, they had to take that risk because otherwise the United States and Israel would have succeeded in basically letting ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra take over Damascus. Absolutely. Which would have been a catastrophe for everyone in the region, to have another failed state after Libya and after Iraq and so on. So the question being not so much about, you know, do people love or hate the government of Syria? People are always, I believe people are always entitled to rise up against their government. But as you said, it was a proxy war, and their intervention to stop the fall of Damascus to these U.S. and Israeli proxies was ultimately what meant they were more exposed in terms of being able to be infiltrated. So there is even a connection to the Syria war to the tactical successes Israel had in recent weeks. I'm just reflecting some of the reporting I've read, but I think worth, you know, something we'll probably see more about in coming weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Just a few minutes left, Rokeya. Lebanon is a somewhat divided country. Nasrallah himself almost often addressed the party's opponents in his speeches. What's the mood like now? Do you think people in Lebanon are ready to resist yet another full-scale Israeli assault? Just today, there have still been attacks on Dahia around the south. What are people saying, you know, kind of across the political class spectrum in Lebanon, as best you can assess?
I think even some of the heads of the most staunch detractors have been surprised, and they've come out and said that, you know, while we disagreed politically, he was a great figure and so, and I do think there is unity behind the assassination of Sayyid Hassan, because it's still something that is hard to believe because of how much he influenced our society as a whole, not just his political speeches, but his religious speeches as well, that he would deliver oftentimes, and we would listen to. He was a part of the fabric of our society. And I do think that people are ready to stand up to Israel, because the Hizb of yesterday is not the Hizb of today. The Hizb of yesterday was strong, but now they're even more organized and ready to confront Israel. And I do believe that people, while they are mourning, the confidence has not been shot. The Hizb took a big hit with the communications attack and then the assassination of their commanders, namely Sayyid Hassan. But talking to people every day, you can see that flicker of hope and readiness for whatever is coming. And those that are staying are willing to stay until the very end. Because I want to reference something that Hassan Nador, Professor Hassan Nador, a Lebanese writer, his niece Amal Nador was killed by Israel in the southern village of Mejlzoun. He said that even if the whole world abandons us, the war is ours and we will fight it tooth and nail. And that is where I think most people stand today here.
Well, that's it's very encouraging to hear, you know, obviously. And Rokeya, you are just a beacon of light. Is there anything that you wanted to add, you know, about the moment now, about, you know, how things look in the South and at the boundary with Israel? What are you keeping your eye on closely?
I'm confident in our men in the Hizb, seeing how they've united together and come out even stronger after the killing of Sayyid Hassan. But I actually want to add something before you let me go, that I've seen a lot of Lebanese people in the diaspora appealing to the sentiment of the West and referencing Lebanon as the Paris of the Middle East, and we have this and we have that. But I want to make it clear that I'm not appealing to anyone on behalf of my humanity, because my humanity is not reliant on the sentiments of my occupier and its advocates. And the names of those who rose up after the genocide began in Gaza and have endured despite all the calamities that they face in Lebanon, in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Palestine, they're written in blood, ink, and they're going to be etched in gold. These are the words of the PFLP referencing Aaron Bushnell, that his name would be written in gold, because every inch of our land here is resisting. Every capable hand is resisting, and we will continue to resist as long as necessary, because the equation hasn't changed and will not change. We will not abandon Palestine. Just like the Sayyid said, kill us under every rock and stone, wherever you may find us, we will not leave Palestine.
Incredible. Etched in gold, for sure. Exactly. Rokeya Chemsedin, you are a journalist, writer, researcher, and the co-host of the fantastic podcast, Delete Your Account, which I'm sure, you know, a majority of our audience is already aware of. But if you're not, go check it out. Delete Your Account with Rokeya and Kumar Salehi. Rokeya, please stay safe. Come back anytime. And thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you both. No, thank you so much, Ali and Nora.
Yeah. Slow Key and the main man, Mr. Adoni, tell him how you feel.
Yo, Low Key, you know we take life for granted too much. Them crumbs that are left from our food and we throw away. People in Iraq or Palestine could live with it. Then 1p, 2p, 5p throw it on the floor. Because we can't buy nothing with it, don't mean we can't save it and give it to charity.
Too many suffering, too many tears. To see how you die, I'm knowing for years. When we look around, nobody care. And the people, they might live in a fear. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now. You know, see the big lights are here right now. After get up, people are not safe right now. Oh, the system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now. You know, see the big lights are here right now. After get up, people are not safe right now. Yeah, yeah.
My music is my natural resource. Now I want. want it back. Till I sever every single chain, I will not relax. Just constant attack, till my world looks like Montserrat. Contact my comrades for combat, what's conscious rap? When you say the truth, they attack like a saber tooth. Thinking clear, they make you disappear like you hate the fruit. Don't need more Bowens, we don't need more Rebels, Weed or Lee or Coens. They tell us about terrorism and tell us about terrorists. Look up the definition and tell us what terror is. Only know the definition if the television sell us it. Public enemy number one, they treat me like Professor Griff. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them I beat people. I'm in us in the system for the street people. Can't believe them and delete people. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. We not see the bigger heads and heels right now. After get the people are not slave right now. Oh, oh, the system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. We not see the bigger heads and heels right now. After get the people are not slave right now. Yeah, yeah.
On the news, they glorify their own henchmen. Support the troops, but won't mention Joe Clinton. It's funny cause the rappers are posing as the gangsters while the government taking money as bonuses for bankers. In life you learn to close your eyes and hold your tongue, but together we will overcome. There's never been a chosen one. Still trying to understand the land I stand on. I'll probably die from cancer, a Sangalife friend's fan. No, never give up, I will never just quit. I will never give in, I will never submit. The reason that I came is bleeding from the veins of the people. Cause we're equal, only freedom is the aim. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them I beat people. I'm in us in the system for the street people. Can't believe them and delete people. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. In us in the bigger heads and heels right now. After get some people are not slave right now. Oh, oh, the system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. In us in the bigger heads and heels right now. After get some people are not slave right now. Yeah, yeah.
If you're subordinate to corporate guys supplying your orders, you're fighting fire with fire. I'm fighting fire with water when they kill me. I know I'll die with a focused mind. Plus there'll be millions of me ready to multiply. Don't just mention, acknowledge me. Remember to honor me. My pen and its honesty. Defended equality. Declared a republic and ended your monarchy. Your corporate dictatorship pretends it's democracy. I hold your bloodline accountable for every crime. Adam Smith to Rothschild, it's all been a clever lie. Two choices now, revolution or genocide. But thanks to Rupert Murdoch, neither one will be televised. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them I beat people. I'm in us in the system for the street people. Can't believe them I delete people. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. In us in the bigger heads and heels right now. After get the people I'm a slave right now. Oh, oh, the system needs to change right now.
Iraq,
Libya,
Yemen,
Syria,
Bahrain,
Algeria,
Somalia,
Tunisia,
Palestine,
Nigeria,
all the way to Bolivia, all of humanity, we all are familiar. We have more that makes us similar with each other. Big up them countries that are named
Venezuela to Mesopotamia.
We love you. Big up Akhoya Loki.
Big up Akhoya Adnan.
Khalas.
Khalas.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!